Otira ngā reonga karanga tāma maha, koutou hoki o te kāinga a tēnā tātou. Well, thank you for the opportunity to close this hui. I think a fantastic 2 days. When we set out, there were only two aims that we had in mind. One was to look back to 1984 and look at what the hui taumata had meant for us. And then the other, and this occupied most of the time, was to consider what are the pathways for Māori development, advancement into the future. So they were the two aims we had. We were supported in this endeavours by a number of sponsors, and we're really grateful to them who sponsored particular speakers, sponsored the dinner, and helped us enormously to make this event happen. And particularly want to say also, this would not have happened without some stunning keynote speakers and some great panellists. The people who organised this conference, Sarah Thorpe and her team, particularly want to say thank you to you, but most of all to participants. It's fairly tragic if you have a conference and no one comes. So it's really great to have seen such a large number here for this commemorative celebration of the Hui Taumata. We started, you'll recall, with Ngāti Whātua, o tira hahi koutou, tēnā koutou, nau I whakatau I a tātou I roto I tēnei kaupapa. Hahi started this whole proceeding off for us with the karakia. Pitipo followed him, and they were supported by Ngāti Kaufata. They were sitting in the audience. I meant Ngāti Whātua. Without that, then we would not have had quite the same spirit that has been here over the past 2 days. At the opening session, we had three inspirational speeches, and it was chaired by Selwyn. And the minister, Peter, made a really important point that there's an obligation to create a society where Māori can flourish and take the world with them. He introduced this notion that what we're doing here has a global significance. And Tumu reminded us of a development in Tūwharetō, where they'd been around all the hapū to find out what their voices, what their aspirations were for the future, and made the point that if we don't listen to the collective voices from all our people, then we are not likely to get it right. And Steve Mahari talked again about how a Māori worldview, which was articulated in 1984 and again now, how important that will be not only to Māori, but to New Zealand in the 21st century and beyond that to the globe. The next session was a retrospective look. It looked back at the Hui Taumata, and Sir Tamati really gave an inspirational speech about his experiences. At that time he was Secretary of Māori Affairs, gave us a good outline of some of the hugely important legislation that was passed in that period, and the benefits of that continue to flow. He also discussed and was able to share with us his views about the so-called loans affair that never actually happened. We had a panel of two people there, Rebecca Evans, who had been at the Hui earlier, talked a lot about economic growth and the number of Māori entities which she had been involved in that developed shortly after the Hui Taumata, Mana, Foma, Māori Television. But she thought that the vital question for the future will relate to the common good and opportunities for whānau, not underestimating the economic entities which had been established, but it's the opportunities for whānau that she saw as being important. And so Tipene, at length, talked about the real question. He thought the real question was how iwi see their futures without a grievance, that if the treaty settlements are settled and there is no grievance, what will iwi see as their future? And he raised a word of warning that we should not let the grievance distort the vision for the future. We need to be clear about designing a world that we want, a world that will be home to our mokopuna and their children. The Michelle Hippolyte was a keynote speaker in a session that looked at balancing iwi aspirations and whānau hopes. She made it quite clear that there need not be a trade-off between iwi and whānau aspirations. In other words, there can be synergies between them, and that the hopes of whānau and the aspirations of iwi can be woven together. It did make the point that a key to all of this is not leaving whānau to be left in the wilderness, alienated from Te Ao Māori. And talked a little bit about the restructuring of Te Puni Kōkiri so that it can focus greater attention to realising results for whānau and results for iwi. And Michelle was followed by a panel who discussed a number of related issues. Will Edwards, by the way, you'll notice he's not doing my PowerPoint. he lost that job, but the... he talked about the importance of an environmental ethic as an example of an area that is not necessarily the same as economic development. So he saw that economic development is one aspect of whānau development, of iwi development, not the only one. And Hami Perepi talked about the importance of a role for iwi to empower whānau, and to do that by enhancing mana, tapu, te aotearoa, mā tauranga Māori, and the essence, the importance of whakapapa. And then Nancy Tuane really emphasised how important it was to have rangatahi involved in the years ahead, and the efforts that they had had to have summits and leadership opportunities for rangatahi. Her view was that transformation, not transaction, should be guiding the interactions. Then we talked about an integrated development agenda. How do we balance the quadruple aims of economic, social, cultural, and environment? And Parikawhia McLean was our keynote speaker. She drew very much on the experiences of Tainui Waikato and talked about the integrated approach that they have with their development plans and how that's incorporated social, cultural, environmental, and economic dimensions, and particularly talked about the Whakatupuranga 2050 program, which takes a long-term view of development. It's a strategic framework, and it covers kingitanga, tribal identity, tribal success, and social well-being. The panel that followed, Aneda talked about the importance of Aotearoa, the opportunity for Aotearoa to become a world leader in integrated development. John Tamihere talked in his view that the state sets the terms for economic engagement, and that is a captured territory, and that the way around that was really that the resources should be transferred into Māori hands so that the goal of inequalities can be properly addressed in a way that makes sense to Māori. And Suwira talked about addressing the context of a society in which political decision-making is a dominant part, and talked of our need to understand the machinery of government if we're going to make progress. I think he said understand, or did he say undermine? I think it was understand. Vicky Robertson, in the last session, almost the last session of the day, from the Treasury, identified five steps to success which were important to raise living standards for tangata whenua. Those were clear pathways for young people, again emphasised the importance of rangatahi, including governance and management skills, risk management, reducing risks without undue risk aversion, which is a fine balance there, I presume, supporting active ownership that brings in the wider community, strengthening with growth, resilience, innovation and people, and building relationships with the wider community. And Vicky was followed by Charles Royal, who talked about four themes of Maori history: the search for survival, the quest for social justice, the desire for cultural revitalisation, and the achievement of creative potential. Interesting point that creative potential is not about, it's about what we have, not about what we have lost. And made another point that if we detach our future from the natural world, we have gone down the wrong path. He also thought that this notion of tino ranga tiritanga should be liberated so that it actually becomes a model to guide the nation. Then we had an open forum and some comments. The Mariana had arranged for one person to be there to say what an enjoyable day it was. to know that we've made great progress and that it's really good to know that the progress is continuing. We had a note to comment about inspirational leadership, and then we had a voice from Ngāti Kaufata which talked about our constitutional position and wondered why that wasn't being discussed here. Remember, he thought that one of the ways to do this was to arrange a marriage with Prince George when he becomes the king. But there may be a less difficult way of doing it. He also asked the question, how do we collaborate more among ourselves at a national level? And Sir Tipini answered that and put him right. Well, in the evening, we had a tremendous event there. Unfortunately, Cora wasn't there to receive it, but the event recognised his contribution, not only to the Hui Taumata, but for the long time that he was a Member of Parliament, and subsequently in his work with Tainui Waikato. But he, of course, it was Cora that had called the Hui Taumata, and rightly he was presented with the Pairoa Award, received by his auntie on his behalf. We had a bit of entertainment there from Julian Wilcox and Kingi Biddle. He didn't actually tell us where Paradise was, but he got very close to it. A stunning performance from the Kaipara College Kapa Haka group, a small group, but a really inspired performance from those girls. And I think there was a group called Betty Ann and Friends afterwards. Day two commenced as day one had with a karakia from our kaumātua Hāhi Walker, from Ngāti Whātua. And then we had a speech from the Minister of Education. She recognised that our population is growing, and that the greatest challenge in the future will be harnessing the potential of 1 million Māori. And that's her—that's not an idle thought. We are moving rapidly towards that number. She mostly was, of course, concerned and talked about education and how to meet the challenge, because without successful education, Māori advancement will be limited. She discussed different pathways that should be available and identified four top success factors: quality teaching practice and leadership in schools, two in the school, and two outside the school, parental encouragement and whānau engagement, parental and whānau engagement in education, and high expectations from the community. The point being that if expectations are low, performance will be low. The next session was about how do we balance the needs of today and the future needs. Our keynote speaker was Jamie Tutor. He offered a quote, which was that the guardians of the future have to fight against claims of the present. And that's where the balance needs to lie. And we can be over-enthralled by our past rather than being fully involved in our future. He recognised that a shift was occurring between a collaborative approach and an adversarial approach as far as Māori and the Crown are concerned, and that there was a bit of an imbalance going on. The asset base for Māori was increasing, but there were signs that well-being was decreasing. He made a really important point also that 80% of Maori land, he thought, was underutilised and that that required greater investment to increase the value, and leadership is needed as well. Gave us an equation to put in the book, Maori Inc. plus NZ Inc. equals Aotearoa Inc. And reminded us of the mission of Te Tumu Pairoa, mobilising land, Maori land and assets to create this generation's legacy. There was a panel discussion that followed him. Tracy Hopapa talked about the need to improve quality of life and to rethink the approach to leadership. And she, remember, said, tell our people not to come home until they've made their mark overseas, but really pointed out that global leadership was to be an aspiration for Maori. Mātānoku talked about the Ngāti Pro experience, the need to maintain economic activity if our communities and our land can survive, and that there was a need to collaborate, to have partners that shared the vision. And he almost got his own quote, but he had to blur it with someone else's when he said, we need to learn from the past so that we can endure in the future. Tahu Kukutai gave us some really interesting graphs and charts which looked at the directions, the demographic trends and transitions that are currently underway, and left us with three points to consider that we might think about championing rangatahi, because that's our economic resource, our source for the future, to connect our whanaunga, what you call the transnational indigenes, and reverse the growing divide within. Then we had our friend Kiawe from the University of Hawaii, who talked a lot about the advancements being made in Hawaii by Kānaka Māori, mirrors to a large extent much of the history that we know here, but at quite within a different context, and some similarities, but some very different situations as well. And he said that to finish by saying that if we're going to move forward, we need to recontextualise values and practices. We need to re-empower values and perspectives. We need to have revisionary leadership and resolute action. Kiawe is followed by two panellists. Aroha Mead, who's been really closely involved with the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People, DRIP. she had been involved with it since 1985. And noted that some of the articles in that document, in that declaration, were initiated by events that were happening here in those years. In 2010, our government endorsed the declaration by Māori and left us with a quote that it's by Māori for a better world, might be something to think about. Robert Joseph also referred to the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People, particularly Article 3, and that's the article that refers to self-determination. And he gave us an illustration of a hapū, an iwi, that had demonstrated self-determination in earlier times. That was Ngāti Apakura. And also he talked about some conditions for balanced governance. It should be a balance between traditional, transactional, transformational, translational and spiritual, which I thought might have been transcendency, but he also recognised that good governance actually has got to start at a whānau level. We had a really inspiring talk from Linda Tuhiwai-Smith about balance in the workforce. She used four examples from her own experience to demonstrate the point. The first example was drawn from her own whānau, and that is building capability in a whānau doesn't happen overnight. It is an intergenerational challenge that may take three or four generations. And then she had another illustration of a program she had been involved in, an internship program for iwi. Found that one of the advantages of it, many of the students really had life-changing experiences as they reconnected with the iwi, and that was for them great. But also recognised that many of the iwi, some of the iwi, had varying qualities of skill base, some very little, but that in the long run, the value of on-site training far outweighed the value of institutional learning. Her third example was about the critical educational events in 1984, the racial bias in school certificate, 50% pass, and you couldn't, passing in Te Reo Māori was limited as well. The Kōhanga Reo at that time emerged as a force and began to challenge the whole educational debate. Then her fourth example was about her time representing a hapū in relationship to treaty settlements and the difficulties of coping with suspicion, how to gain trust, and then how to turn that into re-engaged minds that could make a contribution to the kaupapa. Left us by saying what we need is well-educated whānau and that innovation goes beyond the notion of resilience. The panel that followed, Selwyn Hayes picked up a few, looked at three areas, particularly iwi aspirations and the implications there for the workforce, made a plug for science and ICT, design and creativity, looked at some workforce trends based on demographic trends, talked about diversity, the mismatch, and then global and mobile talent, and then future capabilities, the need to incentivise the workforce and to have optional pathways and investments rather than scholarships, so people are actively encouraged. And he told us he would be sending his children to school in Asia. Sarah Jane drew on her own experiences working within Waikato Tainui and particularly focused on the Hopu Hopu College and how an iwi is making investments in tertiary education. And the examples given at Hopu Hopu, where there are partnerships with the University of Waikato and other partnerships, the MBA program, first graduates last year, a governance program, a governance training, which is also in tow, and how closely education, how close an iwi can contribute to education. And Henirangi Raumati carried that theme to some extent. She talked about some of the opportunities that Te Wānanga o Raukau offered, made a point that... Sorry, why can't I have to hear more? Oh, it's my son that works at Te Wānanga o Raukau. If not one, then well, two or more. Yes, that's the other one, isn't it? Yeah. the importance of second chance learning, I mean, in an ideal world, second chance learning may not be necessary, but the reality is, and it is likely to be the reality for another decade or so, that many people don't get a good opportunity for a decent education and second chance learning is needed. She also thought that perhaps we've had pretty ad hoc and casual approaches to workforce planning and thought that we need a plan. The workforce needs in, for example, the agricultural sector are pretty diverse. And the positive approach to employment there, where that the key is to select the best Māori for the role. If there was someone from Taranaki, they would get priority over that. But you thought that was further down the track, isn't it, right there? Then we've just had an amazing talk from Judge Craig Coxhead, which he had the whole day to write it, so the shouldn't be too concerned. The main point of his speech was, if we're going to have a balanced nation, that we ought to correct the imbalance that has come about since the signing of the Treaty of the Waitangi, and he thought that what the treaty was about was intended to be a balance in the nation, in the way New Zealand shaped itself as a nation. He talked quite a lot about new visions, a path of potential hope and faith where the promise of the treaty can be realised. Although, Craig, I just hesitate a little bit to be careful about the visions. When my last job, I used to treat people that had visions. His recurring point that he made was that the most positive changes for Māori must be driven and led by Māori, and that's a theme that has been reiterated throughout these last 2 days. Well, what conclusions can we draw from 2 days of intensive listening and intensive speaking? The journey to 2040, if that's what we were after, it's underway. It's well underway. It started a millennium ago. It's been boosted from time to time along the way, 1984, for example. And now, in 2014, we're just getting a glimpse of tomorrow. The generation of Māori who prescribed the decade of Māori development in 1984 can be rightly proud of the many achievements. And Tipene, Tamati, others who are there, this is really your moment, that the achievements you put, the processes, the vision that was put in place then has had many achievements. But it's the turn now for a new generation to take the vision further so that it will be relevant to 2040. We've talked about different ways of speeding up that journey. And I think it's been possible to identify 5 accelerants, things that will speed the pace up. Balance, tauritu, inclusiveness, tūhono, enlightenment, whakamārama, navigation, tatai whetu, and reaching the destination, tai kiuta. Just looking at this question of balance, and if a waka is too heavy in one part and too light in others, it'll tip over. And we've talked repeatedly at this hui about how do you balance across generations, across iwi and across whānau, across economic, social, cultural and environmental priorities, across iwi, local, national and global priorities, across the workforce and indeed across the nation. So balance is one of the, if we get the balance right, we are accelerating the journey to 2040. The other question was this about inclusiveness, and this is another theme that has come up repeatedly here. This journey that we're looking at to 2040 is a journey for all Māori. It's not a journey just for the hui participants. It's not a journey just for the knights and the dames. It's not just for iwi chairs. It's not just for graduates. It's not just for runanga or committee members or the trustees or the politicians or the whole hui participants. It's a journey for all whānau, all hapū, all iwi, all marae. It needs to be an inclusive journey. No one must be left out or left behind, as Michelle Hippolyte reminded us. It's also a journey, and others have mentioned this, the Vice-Chancellor mentioned it, that it might be a journey that other New Zealanders want to join as well. And beyond New Zealand, it is a journey that may resonate with the Pacific and in other countries. The point is, it's an inclusive, not an exclusive journey. And the other accelerant is this notion of enlightenment. And Charles Royal talked about heading to Te Ao Marama. He thought we move away from Te Ao Māori to Te Ao Marama as a symbolic shift. That means we take with us Māori worldviews. And that's part of the enlightenment of the journey. We all need to be confident, secure, and able to draw on the insights of earlier generations. And we should be able to turn dreams into realities, but without losing a Māori heart. All of this still requires a Māori rhythm, or it will not actually benefit Māori. And then there's this question, this theme of navigation, and this point has been made frequently. We need youthful, talented, smart, reliable, and committed rangatahi. They are going to take the journey forward. We've got to have navigators who are ready for the job, and really good if we can have navigators who know where they're going. And a major conclusion from this conference is, I think, that there's already a wealth of Māori talent, expertise, knowledge and energy, and we saw it in the panels and with the speakers, and all of that is beginning to define us increasingly as Māori in the 21st century. Then we need to be able to reach the destination. Need to know where it lies. If we don't know where we're going, it's unlikely we'll ever get there. How will we know when we're there? Well, we've talked about some of the indicators that indicate, that tell us we have reached a journey that we're on, reached a destination. We will know that we've reached the destination when all Māori are thriving as Māori, when whānau are flourishing, when iwi are looking forward and are globally connected, forward-looking and globally connected, when te reo Māori, tikanga and marae are strong and vibrant, when the Māori economy is booming, when the natural environment is being regenerated, and when Aotearoa New Zealand constitutional arrangements have been rebalanced, then we will know that we are at the destination. So, we need to prepare for the journey, and we've talked about sharing a common vision. All the people here from many organisations, many iwi, many hapu, many marae, we need to look for a common vision that we can all subscribe to. Important when looking for that vision that we don't let today's problems, the grievances of the past, the discontents that exist, don't let them obscure the vision of what can be in the future or distort the shape of the destination we're aiming for. And if we're going to share a common vision, we need to strengthen links and forge connections. So based on a common vision, we need to extend our alliances. Alliances between like-minded people, most of them are in this room. Alliances built on common agendas and a shared sense of purpose. Alliances where joint impact outweighs disparate efforts. And alliances that don't require the loss of identity or the loss of autonomy. What if all Māori landowners were able to form an alliance that created the biggest farm in the country? The alliance would not undermine the retention of land, of hard-fought titles to land, and the identity that goes with land, but it would realise the benefits that come with economies of scale. And what if Māori-centred schools formed an alliance that balanced institutional loyalty with loyalty to students? Pride in contributing to schools would be retained, but a greater pride in Māori futures could pave the way for the navigators we need to reach the 2040 destination. And what if all members of Parliament who represented Māori were able to balance loyalty to their party with loyalty to future generations of Māori? And what if all Māori-centred services adopted the Whānau Ora collective model and agreed to a national alliance that could realise the full potential of young and old by 2040? And what if all iwi added value to the post-settlement experience by forming alliances with neighbouring iwi, with iwi throughout the country, and with Indigenous peoples across the globe, to establish an economic and political force that could guarantee Māori a smooth passage to 2040? And what if the what-ifs actually happened? If they happened, the journey to 2040 could be reached. Getting to 2040 suggested what has emerged from this conference are five accelerants: balance, tauriti, inclusiveness, tūhono, enlightenment, whakamārama, navigation, tatai whetū, reaching the destination, taikiuta. And to do this, we need to prepare for the journey. We need a common vision that all people can, all us can subscribe to. And we need to form alliances that can take us there. So, kia mai, kia ora.